While American Adventists were traveling to Australia, Australian political ideas were traveling to America. In November 1892, the Australian secret ballot was used nationally for the first time in the United States, resulting in the election of Grover Cleveland as president. On December 13, 1892, Ellen White attended the closing exercises of the first term of the Australasian Bible School on Kilda Road in Melbourne. N.D. Falkhead, treasurer of the publishing house, attended the school board meeting that followed. Falkhead was a member of several secret societies and had refused to leave them in spite of the urging of his fellow believers. He was surprised when, after the meeting, Willie informed him that Ellen was waiting down the hall to talk to him.
Mother's right down here at the end of the hall, Brother Falkhead.
What is it? You started just now.
I just remembered, Pastor White. Saturday night I had a dream in which Sister White had a message for me. I wonder...
This is the room Mother's staying in while she's in Melbourne. I'll leave you here.
Thank you.
Come in, Brother Falkhead.
Do you have something for me, Sister White?
Indeed I do. The burden of your case has been on my mind, and I have a message for you from the Lord. I'd like to arrange a time to meet with you and your wife so I can present the message.
Why not give me the message now?
Well, I hadn't planned to, but I guess I can. There are 50 pages of material over here on the table. I wrote this testimony when I first arrived in Australia a year ago. I had it in an envelope to mail to you, but a voice said to me, "Not yet. Not yet. They will not receive your testimony."
I truly wish to hear what you have to say.
Then let's sit down while I read the message.
Earlier, Brother J. H. Stockton had asked Falkhead how he would respond if Ellen White had a testimony telling him to leave the lodges. Falkhead had replied that such a message would have to be mighty strong. Now he listened in amazement as Ellen, often using Masonic language, read to him of things she could not possibly have learned from any human source. She told of seeing him make small donations to the church and large ones to the lodges. She told him where he sat in meetings, and more.
"And then I heard you addressed as Worshipful Master."
"What?"
"I saw scenes of drinking and carousal at the lodge meetings, especially after you had left. My dear Brother Falkhead, unless you sever every tie that binds you to these associations, you will lose your soul. I cannot relate all that was given me, but..."
"Sister White, do you know what you just did?"
"I've done nothing unusual."
"You just gave me the sign of a Knight Templar, a secret sign."
"I didn't know. It was a movement I saw my guide in the vision make. My burden is that you understand the impossibility of being both a Freemason and a wholehearted Christian." "Brother Falkhead, you've gone pale."
"You did it again. The sign you just made is known only to the highest order of Masons."
"I didn't realize I'd move my hand."
"You did. In a sign that's held in the strictest secrecy. No woman on earth could know it."
"My attending angel did make a movement at that part of my vision, but I wasn't aware I had repeated it."
I accept every word of your testimony. I'm a member of 5 lodges, and 3 others are under my control. I'll attend no more of their meetings, and shall close my business relations with them as fast as possible."
"You do my heart good, and yourself much credit."
"I'm so glad you didn't send me that testimony, for then it wouldn't have helped me. But those secret signs you've made have convinced me your testimony is from God."
On February 8, 1893, Ellen arrived in Auckland on a long-delayed visit to New Zealand. With her were Emily Campbell, Willie White, and Elder G.B. Starr and his wife Nellie. After 12 days of meetings in the Auckland church, the group made the 24-hour trip by coastal schooner to Wangaroa Harbor, arriving at night. Metcalf Hare and Joseph Hare Jr. met them with a skiff for the 3-mile journey by river to Joseph Jr.'s home at Keo.
Ah, the stream's called Keo, same as the town. 'Tis about 2 hours it'll be taking us to get to Joseph's place. We'll take you to Father's house tomorrow.
It's too dark to see much, Brother Hare. But from what light the new moon gives, I get the impression that the scenery along the river is beautiful.
Spot on, Sister White. Sure, and we call this God's own country. Even me, as I grew up in dear old Ireland. The shires are lined with hills covered with fern trees and towery pines. And nowadays, there are lots of orchards, too. The big industry around here is timber. Bushwhackers felled the trees.
Bushwhackers? Outlaws do the work?
Oh, no, no, Sister Campbell. Bushwhackers is our name for men who work in the bush, the backcountry.
Oh.
They roll the logs down the hills to the creek. And then when the winter floods come, they float them down to Wangaroa.
It's so peaceful. The creek is smooth as a lake.
Aye, Brother White. Tis smooth now, but when the floods come, 'tis another story.
2 days later, from the safety of Father Hare's home on high ground, Ellen and her companions got a sight of the river in flood when a sudden rainstorm caused widespread destruction. Over the next 3 weeks, Ellen spoke to members of the community several times in the Wesleyan Chapel in Keo. On March 16th, she left for Napier on the east coast of North Island, where she stayed with Dr. Margaret Carroll, a dentist.
My husband Jacob is a physician, so we're both Dr. Cairo. He hasn't joined the church, but he's cordial to it.
I'm glad to hear that.
Oh, here's young Maui. Sister White, I'd like you to meet Maui Pomare. Maui, this is Sister Ellen White. She'll stop with us during camp meeting.
I'm very pleased to meet you, Brother Pomare.
Tenakwe, Sister White. It's a privilege to meet you. I look forward to hearing you speak at camp meeting.
He accepted the message when he was a student at Te Ote, the Maori College, but his family opposed his new beliefs so strongly he left school. He's stopping with us for the time being.
The first camp meeting in the Southern Hemisphere opened in Napier, New Zealand on March 23rd, 1893, early autumn there. Because of the financial depression, few were expected to attend. So when more than 50 showed up, there was a scramble to procure more tents and set up a dining pavilion. Some attendees found rooms in the community. Many non-Adventists from Napier attended the meetings, and 6 baptisms resulted. Ellen spent the winter in the mission building in Wellington, at the southern tip of North Island. While Willie went to Australia for 3 months, Ellen put aside all correspondence and determinedly settled down to write on the book, which would be titled The Desire of Ages. Her last 8 teeth were causing her such pain that early in July she sent for Dr. Carroll to pull them.
Dr. Carroll, I didn't expect you so early this morning.
I arrived in the night. Are you sorry to see me?
I'm pleased to see Sister Carroll, certainly. Not so certain whether I'm pleased to see Mrs. Dr. Carroll, dentist.
Because she suffered adverse reactions to the medication available in those days, Ellen took nothing to deaden the pain. Dr. Carroll was so upset at the thought of hurting Sister White that she became ill. After the tooth pulling, the patient turned attendant and led a shaking Dr. Carroll to a chair. In August, toward the end of winter, Ellen returned to the Napier area. Willie had returned from Australia.
How are you, Mother?
Willie, I have so much to be thankful for. For the first time in more than a year, I can bend my knees to pray. I came through the damp, windy winter very well. And I can talk clearly, even though I don't have my dental plates yet. God is so good to me.
I'm very happy to hear that. How did the work go in Wellington?
Oh, I have never seen opposition so persevering and determined. The prejudice is like a granite wall, especially since they've gotten hold of the books Dudley Canright has written since he left the church. Right. Well, to some extent, all New Zealand is prejudiced against our message. God has a people in this place, but how can we reach them?
Some people have been reached. In fact, a Maori youth came to Napier recently to talk to workers about attending the Kilda Rhodes School in Melbourne.
Maui Pomare? I met him at Dr. Margaret Caro's home.
No, Dr. Caro is paying for him to go to Battle Creek College for medical training. I'm speaking of Wee Makara. He has an inheritance from his mother, but because he's only 16, his grandfather controls it and won't let him have it to attend our school.
His grandfather dislikes Adventists?
He does now. Some of his relatives told him libelous stories about the church.
Everyone who wants to work for the Lord should have the opportunity to receive training. I'll lend the young man the money to go to school in Melbourne.
Thank you, Mother.
And I'm glad Brother Pomare's going to Battle Creek. I was impressed with him. He'll make a good physician.
Mm-hmm. Maui Pomare became discouraged by the prejudice of some church members, and after his return from America, he let his membership lapse. Later, however, he applied Adventist health principles in his position as health minister for New Zealand. In 1922, he was knighted by King George V. In 1930, just before his death at Glendale Adventist Hospital, Sir Maui Pomare returned to the church. In November 1893, Ellen attended the second camp meeting, this one in Wellington. Also present were General Conference President O.A. Olson, just arrived from Africa, and the crew of the missionary ship Pitcairn. This camp meeting did much to crumble the walls of prejudice. On December 13, 1893, Ellen, Emily Campbell, Willie, and Elder Olson boarded the Wairarapa for the 7-day trip back to Australia.